in the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
Welcome to the Independent Riot Podcast, your home for free thinkers, independent believers, and radicals questioning the status quo. Our goal is to provide you entertaining, intelligent discussion around all of life's most pressing questions without hidden agendas or ulterior motives. So if you're too good for the bad, too bad for the good, and sick of people trying to convince you to join their preferred pyramid scheme this week, you found your home. Now here's your host, Jim Duncan.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Independent Riot Podcast, episode 14. This is about the military-industrial complex, and it is a good one. It's a deep dive episode with me and Freddie F-Cat Turner, analyzing what the military-industrial complex is, how it originated, what its implications for the world are, even debating if there's some positives to it or if it's pure evil. And then we even get down some rabbit holes that only mine and Freddie's brain seem to tend to go through, where we're trying to determine what the reality is of the actual military-industrial complex versus potential conspiracy theories going off of that. And then we even get into stuff like talking about the metaverse and karma for gun runners and members of the military-industrial complex and reincarnation and a lot of interesting subject matter that kind of goes all over the place. What I would recommend you do is, because this is kind of a companion episode, the way we're saying that it up is these deep dives between me and Freddie are a little more freewheeling, kind of fun philosophical explorations of topics. That in this one, you definitely can get the basics of the history of the military-industrial complex, including how it basically originated with at the same time as who you heard at the beginning of the episode, President Dwight D. Eisenhower first using the term in his farewell speech in 1961. And we get into all of that, of how the military-industrial complex came to be and its history. So you can learn that factual stuff, as well as then follow me and Freddie down the fun mental rabbit holes of talking about many other tangential subject matter based off of that. If you want to get more even more concrete information on the military-industrial complex and what the episode that I and Freddie refer to several times in this one is actually episode 7 with my interview with Major Danny Sertian, called Exposing the Military-Industrial Complex. You don't have to listen to that one prior to listening to this one, but I would just recommend that either beforehand or after you give that a listen, because that is a very serious analysis with a lot of important ideas and concepts and facts coming from Major Danny Sertian about the military-industrial complex, and even discussing like what patriotism is and things like that. So anyway, this one's a companion piece to that, as we're going to do throughout the more and more with the podcast, of having the interviews and then having these sort of deep dive discussions about the interviews. So that's what this is. And feel free to give it a listen. And if you like it, please, because part of what we're trying to do is raise the awareness of these concepts and ideas. So if you do like it or find any value from it, if you can, please give us a good rating, subscribe, whatever, to whatever, through whatever podcast player you're listening to this on, but then also share it with a friend so you can spread the word and hope to help to get these ideas about different ways of thinking of politics and the world out to help to create better discussions and hopefully resolve conflict through free speech and different ideas getting discussed to find a greater truth amongst all of us. So anyway, that's it. Hope you enjoy the conversation. And without further ado, here is me and Freddie talking about the military-industrial complex and many other things. All right. How's it going, FCAT?
Hey, I'm great. I'm back.
Nice. Round two. All right, so we are back with episode 14 of the Independent Riot, and this is again about the military-industrial complex. And one thing I'm probably going to explain in the intro, but I'll just mention to you, I did away with the whole concept of season one, season two, where okay. Just forget I said that last episode.
Let's
because
roll.
Yeah, we're back to it's just going to be one long season that never ends, and we're on episode 14.
Nice.
And I might dip out, like the podcast might stop for a couple of days or months or years, but it's just one.
You never
season.
Know what you're going to get. It's more exciting
yeah,
that way.
Exactly. And it's way too hard, I found out, with the doing the season one, season two thing, like with the different podcast. Yeah. Apps and stuff, trying to make that coherent across different platforms. Like, you ended up having to put like some kind of differentiation in the title, season one episode.
Yeah.
And then the titles were just getting really long. So I was just
time is an artificial construct anyway. So don't adhere to it at
point.
All.
Good point. Good point, FCAT. All right. So today's episode is going to go back to kind of reference back to episode 7, which was the interview I did with Major Danny Sershon about the military-industrial complex. And this is such a fascinating topic to me, especially because it exemplifies to me the real world. There is absolutely a thing called the military-industrial complex, which I'm going to get into, kind of give an overview for anyone listening on how it works and the history of it. But then from that, it's very easy to go into many other additional theories, whether you want to call them conspiracy theories or what, in a derogatory term, or they might be real, but there's different theories on what the implications of the military-industrial complex are, who's running it, all kinds of fun stuff that
it's a big topic.
Yep, it's a huge topic. So if anyone has not listened to episode 7 with Major Danny Sershon, where we talk about the military-industrial complex, I highly recommend you go back and listen to that. But you don't need to in order to enjoy this episode. What I'm going to do now is kind of give a quick summary of the military-industrial complex to get us going. So, for anyone that is not aware of what the military-industrial complex is or where the term came from, it describes what is known as an iron triangle, which exists in other industries in the government as well, and it's an iron triangle because there's three different parts to it. There's essentially lawmakers, Congress, there's the bureaucracy of government, that does things like when the lawmakers make the laws and appropriate the funds, there's the part of government that actually makes the decision on how those funds are used.
Right.
And then there, and they actually, that also serves as part of the regulators overseeing the companies that get those funds. And then the third leg of the triangle are special interest groups. So in the military, and which are companies, private groups, citizens. So in the military-industrial complex, what that looks like is Congress, the Department of Defense is the bureaucratic part. Congress are the lawmakers, the decision makers, so to speak. Well, part of the, they're the ones that make the laws and appropriate the funds. DOD makes the Department of Defense makes the decision on where those funds go for the most part. And then the third leg of the triangle are the weapons defense manufacturers like Boeing, Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman. They are all the ones that are making the money off of the sale of weapons to the Department of Defense.
Right. Okay.
And so that makes up the military industrial complex, which the thing that once I started looking into this even more is fascinating is the history of it, because as was referenced at the very beginning of the episode, Dwight D. Eisenhower's farewell address in 1961, that's actually the first time the phrase military-industrial complex was ever used. And because it was the first time that the military-industrial complex ever actually came into existence in its modern form. Mm. So this is where it gets really fascinating to me, is that prior to World War II, we didn't have this issue. And if you look back in history, a lot of our problems with what I would consider problems with government corruption and just even polarization and all of that stuff seem to start to crop up and develop in the same time period going forward through the decades. It's like you almost have a watershed kind of point in history before and after World War II.
Right.
And so so Dwight D. Eisenhower was five-star general that led the invasion of Nazi-occupied Europe to win the war for the Allies in World War II. Basically, many people think is potentially, you know, the last war that was ever sort of a just war, that was facing a real existential threat where the good guys might have won. But that it gets more complicated than that immediately after we win.
Yeah.
But Dwight D. Eisenhower becomes president after Truman, who was Truman was the one that dropped the bomb to end the war as well. And he actually in 1947, after World War II, passed what was called the National Security Act that both brought the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, and the CIA into existence. Prior to that, you didn't have the CIA or the Department of Defense. And so Dwight D. Eisenhower becomes president after Truman. And for the most part, Eisenhower Ike is looked at as a pretty solid president, trying to do the right thing. But he obviously, and even from his speech, you can see that he is his farewell speech where he references the military industrial complex. You can tell that he is both accepting that it's a new reality, but warning us to watch out for it at the same time. And what one of the things that he says in the speech is, in the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex, which, interesting note, he supposedly wanted to call military-congressional industrial complex.
Yeah, Congress was,
but then, somehow that got out of there. But the potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machine of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together. And it's interesting. Another point I'll make is, if you look back to the founding fathers, they actually not only did George Washington in his farewell speech warn against the two-party system developing, but they also warned against standing armies and something like the Department of Defense, a unified single military. What they wanted was basically to rely on state militias being called up in times of war to form a national army. But then once the threat of war left, they disbanded and went back into a less centralized structure.
Yeah.
And James Madison, one of the founding fathers, even speaking to this, said, of all the enemies to public liberty, war is perhaps the most to be dreaded because it compromises and develops the germ of every other. War is the parent of armies. From these proceed debts and taxes, the known instruments for bringing the many under the domination of the few. No nation could preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare, which, ever since the Department of Defense was created in 1947, the CIA...
No shortage of war.
It has never stopped.
Yeah.
We have never not been at war since that moment. The army has never stood down, and it has gone into, and like in the episode, Danny Surgeon gets into this of like, we are, I believe what he said, 700 military bases around the world, 80 different countries. Any given day, he was saying, I believe that we... any given day, we bomb 7 countries, even though you don't hear about it on the news. There's been, I think it's estimated just recorded deaths by the American military, something like 12 million since World War II. And that's recorded. That's not those. That doesn't include all the people that they don't tally up for obvious reasons. Books. Yeah. And all of this, the most fascinating part to me, is that none of it has been declared war. The last war we declared the appropriate way through Congress, because the president's not allowed to declare war, only Congress is. World War II was the last one.
Oh, boy.
So all those millions of people.
That's a lot of bombs that happened since the last war.
Well,
somehow.
This is another fascinating stat. Every year, pretty much, the defense budget goes up. It is now in 2020, it was $700 billion.
Yep.
$700 billion, which is six more than even China. So we dwarf, in terms of money, anybody else in the world. And out of that $700 billion that the Congress gives every year to the DOD, Department of Defense, half of that is then awarded to those companies. Mostly five companies that I mentioned at the beginning: Raytheon, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin.
Yeah.
They get that basically $300 billion a year at this point. So the, the question, and I did want to mention one other thing from Ike, from Dwight D. Eisenhower's warning speech, as he was basically leaving and saying, like, yeah, I know I'm doing this as well, but we're all kind of screwed unless somebody stops it, is he said,
"There's a fire in the kitchen. I'm on my way out." Yeah, so if you guys want to take a look at that.
Exactly. You guys might want to pay attention to this. I'm leaving. And he said, until the latest of our world conflict, the United States had no armaments industry, because, and that is very true. Before World War II, there were no strict arms makers. They had to switch people like car manufacturers into making bombs. And so he goes on to say, until the latest of our world conflicts, meaning World War II, the United States had no armaments industry. American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well. But we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. So that's basically where he's saying, look, we had to do it. We had to start the fire in the kitchen. But I'm leaving. Yeah. And somebody should try and figure out how to put this out. But we had to do it. And so it is interesting that, and I actually, as part of this discussion, I was thinking, like, 9 times out of 10, I think this is a core issue of what is going wrong in the country. including not only the military-industrial complex, but the pharmaceutical-industrial complex, the oil-industrial complex. It's all a pattern with their own iron triangles that all exist. And I think that's the core of everything going wrong in the country. However, just as sort of a devil's advocate, I do like to think, and I even spoke to a major surgeon about this, and his answer was that maybe it wasn't the right way to look at it, according to him. But like, I wonder, like, if you're playing devil's advocate, sort of the reason like Eisenhower is saying of why this was created, you had huge technological changes. For the first time in history, you've got nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
You've got aircraft that can cross oceans. You've suddenly got no longer a geographic defense where you've got this technological.
Keep up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
The Joneses and got so a big fire going.
Yeah. So the question is if you don't do it, create this monster, then how much less safe are you? And Danny Surgeon's answer to that is we would be a lot safer without it, because his belief is that from fighting in Iraq and just his work on sort of exposing and talking about some of these issues, that the majority, and he even used in the podcast reference the story of how Osama bin Laden was basically created accidentally by U.S. policy, him seeing U.S. policy, the military-industrial complex, destroying and taking over parts of his homeland and other Arabic cultures, created his mindset to try and take down the United States. And it's a fascinating question, because you immediately then get into patriotism and people like, how dare you question the United States? But it's like, where does it stop is the interesting thing. And like, what is the answer to, I don't know. I've got a few more things I wanted to point out, but actually that's kind of the history. So I'll just give you a second to chime in.
When I poked into this subject, I, you know, started on my journey right where you're talking about, like, go U.S., go Army, go Navy, go, you know, and I started to sort of understand that there's a divide between, you can be both. You can support the troops and you can support the armed forces, and at the same time question how much things are how much money is spent on things and who's paying for them and why, you know, and in the same, it can happen at the same time. You can both be a patriot and ask questions. It doesn't have to be an either or. You can't just go, well, I'm blindly just going to give them, you know, $27 trillion to do with whatever they want, and that doesn't, and that means I'll support the troops. Or if I don't, if I'm asking questions about where that money goes or what is it for, you know, that I'm anti-army or anti-soldier, you know, and so it was a fascinating interview with your buddy that opened so many questions in my mind. I thought I knew where I was, and after about, you know, half an hour of looking into things, I'm like, wow, that's that's not what I thought.
And that's the more you read and learn about stuff, then doesn't it become more and more frustrating when you see people, and this is where it always goes back to me, like a pet peeve of mine is the two-party system and people like actually getting fired up and voting based on one person saying, make America great again. And yeah. Or another person saying, build back better. And everybody, yeah. And simplifying when they're both participating in all of this shit. And it's not, that's not even the questions that we should be asking.
No, it's not. It's, you know, what are these armies for? You know, and who, what are we going these places to do was a, you know, question. I just, you know, for a long time, you just assume that they have your best interest in mind and that they're going there to do patriotic things and, you know, spread freedom and, you know, apple pie and, and you just don't even give it a second look. But then when you start to ask, you know, well, do we really need to be in, you know, all of these countries at the same time for 30 years? I mean,
and that's what I think Major Danny was saying, that I think he said 25 countries, like his professional guess was that. So we're bombing 7 countries a day randomly around the world that you never hear about or hardly ever hear about. But as far as covert military action, whatever term you label, you advisors or consultants,
not an actual...
or CIA, you know, that's the CIA is just a fascinating, bizarre topic.
When we go down that road, we probably shouldn't go bin Laden a little more in his connections with the CIA. Was an interesting, you know. Interesting rabbit hole there.
Well, that's if you factor in what they're doing, then it is what I think Danny was saying, was that it's about 25 countries at any given time right now and a month from now and a year from now. There'll be 25 countries that you know nothing about and the news does not cover at all, that we are in a military conflict with behind the scenes and some sort of people dying. And what are they doing it for?
What are they doing it for? Yeah. And one of the more interesting things is the amount of vets that I came across that after their tours and stuff they seemed to be asking the same question. Like, that's not really what I signed up for. That's not what I thought I was doing at all. And so that's got to give you a little bit of pause. Is like the actual people that are going places and doing things, you know, they're asking questions of.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's actually Major Danny's story, like kind of what he went to Iraq, was an on the ground commander, and like what he saw there didn't match up with what he thought he was going over there to do. Yeah. And it's just like, so, I mean, but this is where it gets difficult. And with all these questions is, okay, so then maybe your instinct is like to become what's traditionally left-leaning, like do away with the military. The military is bad. And then, but then at the same time, you're like, yeah, but what about when another Hitler shows up? What about like,
that's the overarching question is the, okay, what is the actual, and where are we going to find this answer? I'm not sure. But what is the actual level of threat to said countries, you know? And is it the U.S. that's threatening most of these countries?
Yeah.
and provoking responses? And are those provoked responses calculated to create another, you know, opportunity for some money to be moved around or spent or... so that some people can line their pockets.
We've definitely got to go into the CIA in a future episode, because there's so much we shouldn't even try to go to, because I want to do more research in that area.
Don't go down the CIA rabbit hole. Okay, so I'll give you an MMA analogy. You know, you're all tangled up, grappling on the ground, and the guy is, you know, punching you in your face. And it's sort of to hurt you, but he's not going to be able to tap you out punching you in your face. He wants you to move your arm from there to another place so that he can then take, another move and then tap you out.
Yeah.
You know, so I can see a lot of the same, you know, where they're attacking a country and creating a situation for said ABC to happen and then...
Well, it's interesting going back to the historical context for this, the same time period, Harry Truman, end of World War II, a lot of the justification of him starting the Department of Defense and the CIA and basically creating this military industrial complex was contained in what's called the Truman Doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
Which the Truman Doctrine, presidential doctrines are like statements of policy, sort of like here's the country's new directive for, you know, the foreseeable future. Truman Doctrine was after World War II ended, again, with Dwight Eisenhower leading, you know, the Allied powers to take back Nazi controlled Europe and to defeat Hitler. Our best buddy that helped us do that. It was FDR was president, and Winston Churchill was in charge of England. The third member of the Allied powers was a nice gentleman named Joseph Stalin, who helped us to defeat Hitler by coming in on that front, the side that Germany borders up to Russia. Like, we couldn't have defeated Hitler without Stalin basically invading from that side, which toppled Hitler, ended the threat. But then lo and behold, it turns out, like, within a year from Hitler being defeated, the biggest threat and the whole point of the Truman Doctrine was to stop Stalin and the spread of communism. Because Stalin just didn't give us Germany. That's where the Berlin Wall came from, is it's a dividing line of where the Red Army and the U.S. and British troops basically met in Berlin. Right. And Stalin said, nah, this half's mine. and we're no longer, like, I've got my own plans. And so the Truman Doctrine was all based off of making the world safe for democracy, which meant containing Stalin. So that's where a lot of these, then you get the Korean War coming from that, and you get all of the rise of communist China and all this stuff with the CIA and working behind the scenes. So it's just, but it all goes back to this. So, I mean, on the surface of it, that sounds great. Stop communism.
Doesn't everything sound great on the surface? I think, but that's, like, the whole, they wrap it in the wrapping paper and it's like, hey, this is for jobs. This is for freedom. They're like, well, I like jobs and I like freedom.
Make America great again and build back better. Whatever the phrase of the week is.
Yeah, and the phrases of the week seem to have little to do with actual content.
Oh,
once
yeah.
you start peeling back the layers.
Once the person gets elected, it's all the same. The defense budget goes up. The pharmaceutical budget pharmaceutical companies make more money. The oil companies make more money. And nothing fundamentally really changes except for the phrasing and the color T-shirts.
I mean, can it be a machine where they're just parts that got to move against each other to
Let me give a little more context, modern day context to this now, and question of, like, as examples of the military industrial complex to, like, so, all right, so we've already talked about the money, the sheer deaths. the potential either earth-saving or earth-destroying ramifications of whatever the fuck they're doing behind the scenes. But now, like, just talking about the machine itself and why it continues to operate. So you could have some sort of mastermind behind it all, which I always lean towards looking at more mundane, greed-oriented reasons, but I'll give some examples of that, of the greed going on. So, okay, there's a independent watchdog group called Project on Government Oversight that has done what they call a report a couple of years ago called Brass Parachutes that was basically analyzing the number of people from the military that became defense contractor lobbyists or congressmen or went back to the Department of Defense. So the Iron Triangle, you've got these three hubs again. You've got the lawmakers, Congress, the people that are elected that make the law, make the rules and decide how much money is given out. You got the Department of Defense that basically for all of the military appropriates, give those funds to who they want, as well as send the troops. They basically decide the strategy for warfare. So where all the weapons are being used, how many tanks we need, all that stuff. And then you've got Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, all those companies that employ lobbyists that affect the lawmakers that start the chain. And the lobbyists, which a lot of people don't even get, write a lot of the legal regulations that the Defense Department relies on to regulate the very industries that the lobbyists work for. And
they jump from the head of something right into a position.
Yeah. So that's the brass parachute. Take a guess how many people in a single year they found either went from the Department of Defense to the weapons contractor or from a weapons contractor to the Department of Defense.
I'm going to take a naive guess of like 70%, and that's probably...
Well, yeah, I'm not sure what the percent... It was 650 people in 1 year. So 650 people a year.
It seems like they're grooming them in one industry and putting them in charge of another.
Let's get some specific examples, shall we?
All right. So,
and this is to show also that it is not a party-specific issue, but no matter what the language and the words, it goes across both. So Biden once he became president, he can obviously pick his Secretary of Defense, which Secretary of Defense, second only to the president in the chain of command, is the one that is dictating military policy. He's the one that decides and this is a whole nother Congress is supposed to declare war, not the president, but since World War II, we've just de facto decided to stop doing that for some reason and let the president do it. And so the second person in command besides for the president is the Secretary of Defense. And since they are more of an expert, lots of times the Secretary of Defense is the one actually whispering in the president's ear, like, this is where we need to go to war. On the other component of foreign policy is Secretary of State, which is the diplomatic part. So you got Secretary of Defense, who's in charge of the DOD and Pentagon, is the war guy. And then you've got the Secretary of State, who is the diplomatic guy, the guy that's supposed to prevent war.
Right.
So Biden has given the Secretary of Defense to Lloyd Austin, who was a retired general that went to work for Raytheon. So he literally left Raytheon, the board of Raytheon, one of the weapons manufacturers, to become his Secretary of Defense.
Yeah.
Then Anthony Blinken, I think it's Anthony Blinken or Bilken, is Biden's Secretary of State. He basically had his own lobbying firm named for a road going next to the White House. Like, that's how much of an entrenched figure he is.
Yeah.
So those are the two guys that are dictating foreign policy from the top down right under Biden. Those are the guys deciding where wars are started and prevented, dictating all of the military, how much money they spend on jeeps, tanks, all of that stuff. Now, Trump, prior to him, and this goes back basically to World War II, but Trump, prior to him, Mr. Drain the Swamp, named Mark Esper as the Secretary of Defense, who worked for Raytheon, became Secretary of Defense, left as Secretary of Defense, and went back to work for Raytheon immediately. James Mattis, who became Secretary of Defense, was probably one of the best reputations, but he still worked for General Dynamics in between his time in the military, which is a bomb maker. Pat Shanahan, Trump's Secretary of Defense, worked for Boeing. Then Rex Tillerson, Trump's Secretary of State, one of the only industries that has a larger lobbying than the military industrial complex.
It's sounding like there's a club and we're not in it.
Yeah, pretty much. So it's just crazy that this is like, and I mean, from all the rhetoric and stuff, it's the same. And Trump did a great job of talking a good game plan on some of that stuff. But then in the end of the day, it's still oil is in charge of diplomacy and the bomb makers are in charge of where we go to war.
It's interesting. He didn't start any new wars. I mean,
which is good.
Yeah. But at the same time, he did, build up the defense budget, too.
He definitely wasn't the worst as far as the military industrial. But it just, for all his talk of draining the swamp, it's like, wow, that's really swampy people you're still dealing with.
It's the whole system right now those are some elected people, but you have
none of those are elected.
No,
yeah, they're all
appointed. I get it. That's what I'm saying. That's my point is that, we have these people that we're supposedly electing and that they are, in charge of things, when actually you have all these agencies that don't even write laws. They make regulations and they, for every law that's made, they make 20 regulations.
But you know who writes the regulations? the lobbyists.
Yeah.
In all industries.
And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. That's not even hidden. They
just shammy version of you got some say in this. No, you don't. You don't have. There's nothing. Thanks for your input, but no.
Yeah. It's amazing.
You can't fire them. And your president, whoever you think you elected, can't fire them.
And that's an interesting note, because that is the, and this obviously gets, phrase gets used in conspiracy theories and stuff.
Deep state.
That is the deep state.
Yeah.
Is all of those bureaucracy people that never leave.
Yeah.
And that, in a way, hold vast amounts of power, because we have this system set up, which the founding fathers, from everything from a two-party system to the military-industrial complex, all amazingly, when they were setting up our government, warned against 200 years ago.
Yeah.
Said, don't do this. And we've done it. And now we've got, basically...
It's
all this crap going on that nobody can figure out how to stop.
Yeah, another theme that I saw when I was poking around into this is, you know, people go to school and they come out with engineering degrees, electrical and you know, such, and they think they're going to go and do some great things for humanity, and then they're like, and here I am making rockets and bombs.
Because that's where, because there's $700 billion a year that has to be spent.
They're taking all the brain power that they, and these people are good people, but they're like, why, just, you know, how did I end up here?
Well, that's what the funny thing is. I was listening to an anti-military industrial author talking about it, and I think it was a guy, I've forgotten what his name was, it's William Hartung, I think, that wrote The Prophets of War about Lockheed Martin. I think he was the one that was saying or pointing out that so in Congress there's like different things called caucuses where they get together to solve issues and things and make it a priority. There's no caucus for solving childhood hunger. There's no caucus for, you know, health.
There's a caucus for drones.
Drones, exactly. There's a drone caucus. Yeah. And it's just like, how the fuck did we get here? And we're in, instead of people realizing this and talking about nuanced things and leaving party affiliations behind, all they do is get more and more fired up, like, those damn Democrats or those damn Republicans, we got to kill them.
Well, and they're playing the fiddle to the song that they want us to go along with. And that's what they want you to focus on. You know, was it red, blue? Was it, you know, races, you know, different, whatever way they can divide us and keep you all caught. Then they can go behind the scenes and do whatever they need to do, moving armies around, pushing people off of land, you know, securing your freedom.
Yeah. And that's it. That's an amazing thing. And like, hopefully more people are waking up to the media.
Army. I'm like pro USA all the way. It's just, it was very eye opening to see what your country might be doing in your name with your money.
Yeah. And my question just keeps on going back to, what the fuck are they doing?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's one thing, but that's what I asked Danny Surgeon is, I was just like, okay, so trying to play devil's advocate. What, because I have heard people talk about like different, like, national defense analysts, talk about like dirty bombs and the threat of, because in different areas around the world, you've had like nuclear material go missing. So, potentially somebody could get into the U.S. with a dirty bomb and, you know, sort of destroy New York City or something. So is that the justification for all the $700 billion and 25 countries at any given day and seven? Are we just trying to grab all the dirty bombs still?
Or? Yeah, that's a good question, but it's a bigger question than that. I mean, it's like, what are we doing, right? What are the, what is their game plan? What is the purpose of all of this? Do you think there's a bigger purpose somewhere? That dump somebody, and this is where you differ to me.
Yeah.
Like, nobody's in charge. It's just greed on all accounts. Or are they aiming us in a direction? Are they funneling us in a direction?
Well, this is the fascinating thing, because like once you start to, I do lean towards believing for the more mundane, straightforward example or answer rather than the boogeyman, the Darth Vader pulling the strings at the end of the day. But it gets so freaking complex. And then depending on what your own personal beliefs, like I try not to think in terms of simplified conspiracy theories, but at the end of the day, like once you see how complex it is and how there's so few real answers, if you've got any leanings at all towards believing in sort of the spiritual aspect of things, mm-hmm. then it is a short step to just go, well, maybe it's just good versus evil, and there is some thing pulling the strings behind a puppet master.
That, I mean, really, we're going to have, what was it? There's going to be a site for a one world religion. They're getting together here. Chrislam.
That sounds perfectly nice.
What do we do? COP26 convention in Glasgow. There was Christian, Jewish, Buddhist, Muslim, Taoist, and Confucians all there signing a climate change agreement. So they all want to keep it under 1.5 degrees. Now, doesn't sound like something, that's not – you can't quantify that. But they're all going to get together to steer you against your carbon.
That's why I have such a hard time joining any groups at all. Because, like, part of it, that sounds great.
That's the thing.
Until there's that digital chip in your palm that you got to use to get into the Chrislam – center and to pay for your bills.
Yeah. It's going to be digital money soon. But once they've said that they're going to all agree, all these religions are going to agree that your carbon footprint you're what's wrong with this country or what's wrong with the earth. And it's now on you to reduce your carbon footprint. You know, don't worry about volcanoes and what they might naturally pump into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Stop looking over there. It's you and your carbon footprint, and we're gonna take charge of that for your safety, and you're going to love it.
That's the main part of the main part that bugs me about the climate argument is the people arguing for the masses to take climate change more seriously, and they're flying around in jumbo jets and on super yachts and
they do the electric cars, but the infrastructure is in there, so they have like diesel generators that power the electric cars so they can get the virtue signal in, you know, and they can drive the electric cars to their thing, but they're really running it off of coal or diesel because it's not there. But you know, you don't want to go down as a theory where they're trying to get to a point where they can control you and how far you can or can't drive in an electric vehicle, you know, and they can't turn it off at any point in time and, you know, keep you into a city. The smart cities. Have you heard about the smart cities?
I think so, but
where they're going to, everything is in walking distance.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be
digital.
But
again,
it sounds.
Sounds nice.
Fantastic, unless you have a megalomaniac in charge of it and they decide what is, you know, right and wrong at some point.
Yeah.
It's probably going to start off great. I mean, there's going to be YouTubers rolling around, you know, in there with their penthouses, plugging the smart city.
All right. So a lot of this to me always goes back to, and this might be another podcast episode dived into more deeply, is technology and its impact on society. And is technology, like, I mean, the obvious answer or most straightforward answer is there's not a moral component to technology. It's the way you use it. But, like, it's fascinating to me that technology, which I think I even referenced my idea in the last episode of, that technology is basically like it's cinching a knot tighter and tighter is the way that I see it. Because technology gives you, in the same way that 100 years ago, there was no way you could even imagine that you could just on a Zoom phone call or FaceTime talk to somebody in Australia.
Yeah.
You can do that easily, pretty much for free now. That was unheard of. And it's like, that is And from those conversations, people impact each other. And that's just one example, but it's like the influence of people on each other is getting cinched tighter and tighter and tighter exponentially with every ratchet up of technology. And it's like, and we don't have the capacity to deal with that mentally or spiritually, or like, we're
Look at all your spiritual leaders. They're leading you down one road. They're, you know, Pope's going transhumanism, you know, and that's a, you know, Neuralinks. You're going to be putting in contact so you can access the augmented reality for the metaverse at some point. So, you know, it's what if the AI is the one that's behind the movement of all these things? You know,
what do you think? There's an AI out there that's been orchestrating?
What if?
Yeah,
these are just the questions.
When would the AI have come into existence though? I would guess 1947, the same time that the CIA and Department of Defense.
When did we take a giant jump in technology? Was it around the 50s or right around?
I think there's been in different industries. There's been, you know, different jumps, but. Yeah, I mean, that Roswell was the 1950s. So
I mean, I've been alive long enough to go from black and white TV with three channels that came in to having a supercomputer in your pocket to seeing people get hooked up to, you know, computers in their brain to be able to see again.
Yeah.
That's quite a jump.
It is fucking nuts to think about the changes we've seen in our lifetimes. And then if you project that forward, it's hard to even imagine what it's just going to be, a bunch of fat people masturbating in the metaverse. That's the future.
Ah, the metaverse is so pretty. It's so, you know, when you get those games on your phone and it's gling, gling, gling and sparkles.
Yeah.
The metaverse is so pretty. And I'm so duly excited. I'm terrified of the potential of it. And at the same time, it's the coolest looking thing ever. I mean, who wouldn't want to, you know, be piloting a mech robot, you know, fighting in intergalactic space with your buddies and making money doing it, you know? But at the same time, what are you really doing?
Potentially in the metaverse, there'll be a scenario where you're so deeply in virtual reality, you can basically be whatever type of hero you want to be and make money by doing it. It's basically perfectly potentially positioned to give you all the dopamine hits.
One of them.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch the movie Ready Player One?
Did you hear about it?
A lot of people say that TV and movies is foreshadowing of what's coming.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically everybody lives in a slum and then throws on a headset and is whoever they want to be in the metaverse. And that's where maybe they're going to make life suck so bad outside of the metaverse that why wouldn't you go into it?
That's a lot. It's already getting there with social media. Then so many people developing like psychological problems from.
But we're there already. You can go in and make metaverse clothing and sell it.
Yeah.
And make real money.
I saw a reporter that went into, even though we're in the early stages of the metaverse, obviously it won't get much better, but she went into the metaverse. I think it was Wall Street Journal reporter, maybe went in for like an entire weekend.
Yeah.
She wanted to see if she could stay in the metaverse.
How did she do?
It was, well, first of all, because they showed what she was seeing. Mm-hmm. Which I didn't even realize there's already in certain aspects of it. There's like clubs you can go to. Yeah. There's meetings. You can have business meetings.
You can buy digital land.
Yeah.
In the metaverse. And as a passive income, rent it out.
Yeah.
To somebody who wants to run a store or wants to run a nightclub or wants to have a billboard It's awesome and horrible.
Well, that is exactly what her experience seemed to be, and which made perfect sense. Because all of the, first of all, of course, the graphics aren't good enough, so there's a disconnect a little bit. So even though you're in this world, it's basically like they're all Wii, whatever characters with big
Atari, you know, stage of the men.
She basically just got really nauseous after. She was like sort of addicted and nauseous.
If you saw the Zuckerberg commercial for his metaverse, you know.
Did
you see that?
Yeah.
He wasn't wearing a headset.
Yeah.
So at some point, it's going to be not the VR headset that makes everybody sick. And I'm kind of the same way. If things, the XY coordinates don't match up with what I'm feeling, I'll get nauseous. But what if it's a contact lens or a pair of glasses you put on?
The glasses are coming next year from Apple.
Yeah.
They're already, like, they've announced them, I think. They're going to, like, where you can, with the glasses on, augmented reality. The same thing they've been talking about for like 5 years, but apparently they've fixed it where they don't look weird. They're going to be stylish. You're not going to be able to tell really that somebody is accessing the internet when they're looking through
and
them.
They're going to feed it to you slowly, a little bit at a time, little dopamine at a time. And then what about the next group of people that get augmented? Like, let's get into your brain a little bit, and you can the Matrix, download of how to fly a helicopter. You know, how to fly a helicopter in real life when you can download
be tempting.
It.
Yeah,
it does sound.
Yeah, if you just had to have some implant, and then you could just download
anything, and then
in order, like all this crap, in order to keep up. Yeah. And everybody's just like, oh, well, you don't have to do it. Yeah, but once everybody else knows kung fu, you're going to you're not going to want to be the kid left out that doesn't know kung fu, or you're going to be getting your ass kicked every weekend.
What are you going to do? I mean, what are you going to do if you're the last guy on your block or kid on your block that's not plugged in? Where are you going to go? To the playground?
Yeah, and what are you going to talk to people about? You'll just be a weird, pale homeschool kid that lives in a barn somewhere that no one talks to.
Well,
and they're probably the healthiest kids.
They're not going to be anywhere to talk to. They'll find a way to feed you on your couch.
Yeah.
They'll have a pill that you can take that'll give you the amount of calories you need to survive a minimal life. You know, maybe have a drink bag of some sort.
Feeding tube just like the Matrix.
Right, because you got to go to work,
Jim.
You're going to have to go to work
Like you would, in there.
In there, there's going to be people, and there might already be people that go to work in the metaverse.
And those jobs are going to be much more entertaining for you than the jobs out here. You're intrigued to do it. You're like, why would I be a plumber when I can go in the metaverse? And
Think somebody at that point in the time is just like, why do I need a house? And they'll make available to you a Metapod where you can just store your living meaty body.
Yeah.
And
that is the Matrix. And then you're basically and then the way you'll pay for the pod is they'll have some way that they're siphoning off your energy.
Yeah.
To help power things for the good of the planet. So you'll just basically be like a living battery, a big sack of fat that's a living battery wheezing in the real world. But
it's such a foreseeable slippery slope.
Yeah, but you just can't stop it. It's the same way. It's the same way all of our Secretary of Defenses work for Raytheon.
Well, are you going to really need to bomb people anymore, though? Once you give it all up?
Yeah.
Like,
who knows?
Maybe they're going to have, since, you know, people are putting stuff in their veins right now, you know, voluntarily, maybe that you're hooked up, just straight hooked up. I mean, and what is there to bond? Like, I don't know. I don't understand what's left for, say we get to that point and everybody's in the pod. You know, if there's some elite people, what do they want to do with the rest of the world?
The problem or the saving grace to all of this is everything. It's never 100% of people. So there's always a fly in the ointment. So imagine this scenario that the industrialized world is basically all become fat sacks of wheezing flesh batteries hooked in with their visors in the metaverse or the neural implants or whatever. So they're all action stars.
Yeah.
And, big titty chicks in the metaverse, and everybody loves them. But that's not what they are in real life. But then there's in all these pods around the world, the rich people, there are a few small countries of very poor people that are left out.
Mm-hmm.
And once everybody is in the pods, somebody is going to rise up and overthrow the entire system. While everybody, unless there is some sort of AI that is clamped down or some way, like it's that whole theory of good times create weak men.
Yeah.
It's sort of the way the Yuga cycles work,
yeah,
where you go through better and worse periods because there's always brewing. Like, so as everybody gets more in the, hell, I'm worried about this in more practical terms. Like, I think that's what's going on between us and China, is like, we could basically be completely lowering our guard, and China, as soon as we're all in the metaverse, China's taking over.
Yeah, that's...
Which is maybe why
it seems so old school.
And this is maybe why the military industrial complex is a wonderful thing. And we need to bomb more stuff to prevent it.
It just doesn't feel a
I don't know if it feels right. Something feels off about that.
That something feels but at what point is the real world gonna be just not glittery enough for you,
yeah,
or most people?
Like, I think it's already there. That's what Instagram is. That's that's what social media has done to like relationships and date. Like, it's basically made everybody constantly is comparing whoever they can get to people on Tinder, Instagram. Same thing with jobs. I mean, not as much, but like everybody wants to be an influencer rather than a teacher.
Right. But I mean, the whole, I remember Pokemon Go.
Yeah.
When that came out?
What happened to that?
That was just a test, I think. It was just a test with augmented reality. But I was working, I was working in a bar on
that was insane.
On a Riverwalk. And
for like a year, there were people
over
chasing
the summer,
nothing.
All of a sudden, it was like zombies.
Yeah.
Everybody was walking by. It was an outdoor bar, and you could see people walking along the Riverwalk, and there was groups of 20, 30, 40 people, like randomly though, not all together in a group, but just randomly walking, like sort of scuttling along, looking at their phones, and it was surreal.
It went on for like a year.
People chasing the little Pokemons in the augmented reality to try and catch them. And
I was jogging in a park, and there were like 15 people that were all looking in a bush. And I stopped thinking like there was a rabid raccoon or something interesting in the bush. And it turned out, it was the augmented reality Pokemon that was supposed
months,
to be in the...
That 2 months was...
Was that all it was?
Well, it was when it hit for a while. Yeah, hit really hard for the summer, basically.
Yeah.
Really hard for the summer, and then I don't know what happened to it. It started
that is
and
bizarre as shit, because that was such a cultural thing, and you would think,
why are they not?
They'll go for vaccines for a flu.
Yeah, at the same time, though, those people have their cameras, like, laying out... did they get the world mapped out for the metaverse? Where the camera is scanning everything to give you the data.
Right. Yeah, because they were taking in the data.
Because how better to scan the entire, the United States or the world, however many places we're walking around, like everybody walking around and scanning every inch of everything.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't have this place scanned. Let's put a Pokemon there. Let's send the people out with their cameras to get us our metadata. Would you ever think about that?
Yeah, well,
as a reason for...
I did not think of that being a reason. That is, chilling to think of what I've thought about is with these Apple glasses that are coming out. We are going to be so close because you can access the internet through the lens.
Yeah.
And there's already facial recognition software that can match up like in Facebook or whatever. They can identify you.
Yeah.
How long until basically you have got no anonymity anywhere in public with people wearing those glasses that it just basically, as soon as somebody sees you, it comes up, Freddie Turner,
already,
your age.
It's already a thing.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just like, that bugs the shit out of me, because I'm just like,
that's
that is
going.
Power
the
that
digital,
people,
the digital
strangers have over you then.
That you're going to have, they're going to be able to shut it off. I mean, unless everybody fights back and goes the DeFi, you know, route. But even then, there's a digital trail to everything. So you might think that something isn't tracked, and they'll tell you that it's not, but it is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because it has to be at some point for computers to talk to each other.
Yep.
You know, ones and zeros have to trade from one computer to another computer, and there's got to be a digital track to that somehow. You know, maybe they got the blenders in there that tries to hide it, but it's got to get through the blender somehow.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all tracked.
Yeah.
And then once they got everybody hooked up, is that when they flip the switch and go, ha ha, you're all batteries now?
Yeah.
That's. And guess what? You know, I'm the AI Satan. You lose.
That's where it all gets so out of control that at the end, then, yeah, it's extremely tempting to think, well, maybe it is Satan. Maybe it just is. That is the answer.
What if religion was just on the way to this? What if it was just a way to compartmentalize some people and, you know, put them against each other to punch you in the face to move your arm? What if they've just been positioning you for a long, long time? TV's got really cheap, you know.
Yeah.
They seem to be giving you a narrative of a program of things you should think. Now, that's another good point is, who is going to make the metaverse and what you see? Imagine they have control now of what you see on a TV. But if you go outside, you see something else, you know, nature or whatever.
Yeah.
If you're in the headset or it's plugged into your computer, they're in charge of every single pixel that you see.
Yeah.
So is that? Yeah. I mean, is that chilling a little bit?
Yeah.
Something or someone is going to have control of every single pixel will have a purpose.
Yeah.
And you'll come across it for a purpose.
This is why I always go back to really liking the woods and rooting for solar flares. Because if we have a big enough solar flare, we can just rip off. We can, there's gonna be a little bit of a Mad Max period.
Yeah.
But if, as long as you stay away from the big cities for a few years, then we could get back to being a really nice
well,
planet to live on.
Already in the metaverse, experiencing the metaverse in the metaverse.
Yeah.
You know, as long as we're a planet that has a sun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we got to figure out some way to tie this back into the military industrial complex.
Hell yeah.
Before we go too far down the rabbit hole. So, yeah. So, what do you think? Do you think the military industrial complex is a good thing? Is it saving us from one of those dangers, Freddie?
I think everything starts as a good thing with a good purpose. I mean, people don't sign up for the army to go do bad things.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, how the flag has become such a thing. You know, you see it and some people get triggered by it. And it's the idea behind some things start off great and then get used for bad purposes. You know, USA pro people are not out to do bad things, but maybe bad things are being done in their name.
Yeah.
So it can start off great and end up in a horrible, horrible place.
And I think that's true about absolutely everything. This is always my argument of like why you need nuanced thinking, why free speech is so important. So different people with different experiences can talk about it and a greater truth can be found from it than either one knew beforehand.
Yeah.
But it's because labels, sort of like technology itself, isn't inherently good or evil.
Yeah.
Symbols and labels. But they can be both, depending on who is using them. It's the same way with like religion. Like, I know people that are so anti-religion because of some events or information they took in that they think that all everybody that is a Catholic is like a pedophile, like a rapist priest, and they're the Catholic Church is.
Yeah.
But also, I've known some of the most amazing people I've ever known were Catholics. The same way with Islam.
Yeah.
Is like some of the best people I've ever known were Muslims.
Yeah.
Some of and the difference. So the different. It's not the label of religion, whether it's Christianity or Islam or whatever, the flag. It's not the label that's good or bad. It's how the people behind it using the label, what they're doing with it.
Yeah.
Like with religion, thing. If you apply it to yourself,
yeah,
it's awesome. If you apply it outward, it becomes judgmental, destructive, yeah. Hypocrisy.
I've always had my questions with religion. It seemed too small to me. And it just seemed compartmentalized. And I've always asked bigger questions. So as far as me, I've been spiritual. I felt spiritual, but not religious. And I think the way I looked at religion, it seemed like a good idea of how to coexist without killing each other. It's a base set of rules that if everybody sort of follows these rules, you can coexist and not kill each other.
Yeah.
Although so many people have been killed
over the interpretation of those rules. Yeah,
push their rules on somebody else. So, like I said, it can start off in a good place and end up in a horrible place.
Yeah,
and is which one is right? Maybe it's just the division again.
Yeah, you
know, where they.
Well, that's the thing is with all this stuff.
Why are they combining them?
Yeah.
Why would they be combining them?
The only thing, though, is that I'm pretty sure that already exists in the – I think that's what the Baha'i religion is it's actually a combination of Christianity, Islam, and Judaism.
Yeah, but
that's been around
for
a while.
The main people in these, you know, religions coming together and – working towards a one world religion, which sounds, I mean, if everything in its purest form can be awesome.
True religion, you know? Whatever the instruction manuals you are attributing to as true religion are rules you apply to yourself.
Yeah.
To be a better person and a better, all the rest of it is marketing and manipulation.
Do you think a one groups. World religion would allow you to have questions?
No, no. That's my entire point of like when like it, and from taking it back to U.S. politics and modern like so, the left, so more towards the Democratic side of the U.S. Political situation used to be the big arbiters, the big supporters of free speech through most of our lives, and then just over the past 10, 15 years. That is flipped on its head, where now it is the right and the Republicans that are arguing for free speech, and the liberals, a lot of them, are arguing to clamp down on speech because it hurts people, like words or violence argument and ridiculous things. But even so, I am completely against all those arguments. I think they're completely absurd, extremely destructive to silence anyone. And we should remember that they're just noises coming out of people's mouths and to treat them as such, but encourage everybody to speak. But but going back to what you said, with religion, it is that Lindell. This is how ridiculous arguments have gotten in the United States, where he somehow was talking about starting his own social media platform that would be for free speech to get away from those damn liberals. And in the same interview, he was talking about it's gonna promote free speech. He goes, and there's not gonna be any curse words, and it's gonna be a Christian. Like, he had a whole list of things that were already forbidden. And it's like, that isn't free speech.
That's a cartoon of free speech.
Yeah, it's like that. You could start your Christian social media, and that's great.
Sure.
Do it. Yeah, but don't confuse yourself that you're supporting free speech.
Yeah,
that's
free speech is such a big, big. You think of, no, I don't want to go back to the metaverse, but
you know, we gotta stay out of the metaverse.
There's gonna be some free speech in the metaverse.
I don't even.
And what if it's controlled by your thoughts and not your speaking? Can you stop thinking what you think?
I would think if you're talking about like a metaverse and the most extreme version And we got to remember to not talk about the metaverse next episode.
After this question is answered.
But just because we'll get known as this will be the metaverse speculation podcast.
Yeah. No,
but
we'll do a whole nother one on it.
So I would think if you were in the metaverse with all it completely designed to basically make you have an incredible experience where you want to stay in there and you don't realize you're a fat bag of wheezing death in real life, that there would be no need for the concept of free speech because the entire world you would be experiencing would be placating you. So it would never, there wouldn't be even...
You're really not interacting.
Yeah, you're not interacting, so there's no reason
you
for more...
You think you're interacting.
It would do that a little bit to sort of tease your brain into thinking things were hard briefly to get you to feel...
I just had a huge thought.
Yeah.
And what if you, right now, are sitting in a meat pod...
Oh, yeah.
And everybody else is the AI making you think you're interacting.
Yeah, well, that could be... We could be, Freddie, when we each die here, you might just be like ripping off a headset in the other world and just going, looking at some other buddy and just going like, holy shit, that was intense. Yeah. How long was I in there? And he's like, oh, you're in there about an hour and a half. He's like, holy shit, it felt like 80 years. And I had this whole life. And
and there was this military industrial conflict.
Yeah.
To tie it back in.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Oh, man, my brain is not in the military-industrial complex
it's
now.
It's hard. It's hard to keep it, you know,
wrangled.
It's hard
to keep it,
Sorry.
So, I mean, if we are trying to tie this back into the military-industrial complex, just of what... So, part of the answer to all of this stuff has to be... And even the... metaverse and big tech and media, free speech, all of it. It's got to be getting corruption out of the system. And that even gets difficult because then you're like, well, what is corruption? Because a lot of the things that run the military industrial complex, that Iron Triangle, are legal. So it isn't even where you can point to it and say it's illegal, so it's corrupt.
Yeah.
But there's something to the aspect of that we've got to somehow raise people's awareness to see this stuff is going on and getting back to me, it always comes back down to just the concept is of you can't let any groups have too much power, whether that's Google, that's Raytheon, whether that is Muslims or Christians or the PTA of middle-aged women somewhere. There's no people have got to sort of start to rise towards the level where they see, like, as centralization of any power has got to be temporary.
Right.
Like, the danger of that has got to be realized more.
Yeah.
So that, like, and this, like, all, like, it used to be... that some of the things ever since, you know, that 1947 act that started the Department of Defense and the CIA, and somehow we started doing away with the process of actually debating military involvement and just wrote the military authorizations that never end now that give the president the right to do whatever he wants with no oversight as far as the military action.
Right.
Those used to have, like, people used to get, and this is the same thing with the Patriot Act after 9/11. They used to get that, okay, in a state of war, you might have to give up some civil liberties to face the threat. But it was always so ingrained in everyone.
For your safety. Those three words are super dangerous.
Yeah, but this is where, like, the reason why it works now to manipulate things is because there is some legitimacy to the argument that you could, but the idea, and I don't see why people have such a hard time doing this nowadays, you need a time frame. You need a, like those military authorization things they gave the president, they used to have built-in sunset clauses. They're like, this is only going to last for 9 months.
Well, that's a great idea, Jim, but what they seem to have turned the page on is from physical, tangible enemies and or, you know, things that they want to overcome to terrorism.
Yeah.
And it's an open-ended.
Terrorism never, and like, biological threat now.
Right, right.
Yeah,
but
it's
but
the same thing.
The words
thing,
that they're
yeah.
fighting,
yeah.
you know, drugs. Like, yeah. they're so open-ended.
Yeah.
There's no edge. There's no yeah, finishing. You can't. How do you win a war on drugs?
You never do. Especially when one of the players is supplying people with the drugs.
Terrorism.
Yeah.
It's an endless,
yeah.
you know.
You can't, you as Danny Surgeon pointed out, you just make more terrorism by trying to end it.
So, but that's on purpose. And what you're talking about, like, you can't say, well, I'll end terrorism in 9 months.
Yeah.
That's why they're using
words.
For your safety, protect you from.
You can't end terrorism in 9 months, but that, like, the Patriot Act is a good example. The Patriot Act after 9/11, it should have been, like, okay, so I'll give an example of where it worked somewhat more appropriately. In the Civil War, mm-hmm. Abraham Lincoln suspended whatever it is, habeas corpus or whatever, if that's the right term, of where you, I can't remember if that's the right term, but where you basically have the right to an attorney and a due process.
Okay.
Lincoln, during the Civil War, suspended that. That's one of your biggest civil rights, is the fact that you got to know why you're in prison. You got a right to defend yourself. You got a right to face your accusers.
Yeah.
But he was an honorable enough person, and people, the standards, they knew the importance of civil liberties. That was looked at as a extremely serious thing that was had a time frame to it
yeah.
that immediately then it was
trust.
Then it was given back.
Yeah.
Yes. But that like
that they'll give it back.
Yeah. But they never give it back
yeah,
anymore.
They don't.
Because there's no honorable people.
No.
And they literally, and even when some of those military authorization things they used to do to give the president access to not having to get Congress's approval to orchestrate military action. They used to write these military authorization things, and then Congress would vote on and say, okay, yep, yeah, we allow them to do it for this amount of time or with involving this country for this specific reason. And then it automatically became null and void once those parameters left. And then more and more, all they do is just go, now let's just make it open-ended because we don't want to bother coming back here to talk about it again.
All right, Jim, what if I give you a sort of Band-Aid solution where you
solar
don't...
Solar flare?
Well, no, besides a solar flare.
I'm really in favor of a solar flare.
What if you don't... You can't limit the excursions they go on, but what if you could turn over Congress with time limits, you know, on the actual, you can change the people out. So to continue the narrative, you'll have to
keep that's a big,
pumping,
we should have term limits.
You know, new people that think the same way in this position.
We should
You can cut the people. And, you know,
And that's amazing. That
maybe.
Should be, and that's exactly in line with what the founding fathers, more what they wanted.
Term limits.
We should absolutely have term limits, but nobody sees the importance
term
of
term limits. Because
everybody's chanting, make America great again or build back better. And Trump will save us. Biden will save us. Nah, I don't want to learn about the whole process. That's too confusing.
No,
term
even
limits
the,
are, it's a hard word.
The whole thing, Jim, has gotten so crazy. It's got to get shaved down to a core. And there's so many corrupt people that I wonder who, and this is more on like a spiritual level, like who upholds anything? What ramifications are there for being a bad soul anymore?
Very,
and who do you answer to?
That's interesting. And that is an interesting.
Karmic, you know, is there a karmic retribution if you break a law or a, you know?
So on the big picture, like the actual spiritual answer to that, it's, you know, obviously who knows, and there's different interpretations of that. One thing that I think is fascinating, and that the internet has definitely accelerated the what used to be sort of a cohesive, more cohesive way that society got along, is like the internet. So first of all, the airplane travel and all of this, people being able to travel more, started to erode it. But you used to have groups that, it might not be right or wrong, but you would have groups that had that cultural set of rules instilled in religion or whatever it was. And they weren't ideal, but everyone figured out, I've forgotten what there's a social scientist that did a study on it with monkeys as far as how many monkeys you can have in a group before it turns into chaos. Like there's an actual number, which I think is like 122, that it's that small of a group. A group is sort of like self-forming.
Yeah.
And everyone will be happy in the role. You'll have a hierarchy that naturally forms, but it all makes sense to everyone. Yeah. You'll have like people that like, oh, well, that guy got to bang the hottest chick because he can kill everyone.
Yeah,
that makes sense. But I'm okay with that because I'm the second biggest dude, so I get to bang the second hottest chick. I can live with that because I don't want Bart to kill me.
Yeah.
And like it all cohesively makes sense and people fit into the roles. But over 122, it starts to turn into chaos. And then, so I think you used to the progression of the world, you would have these pockets that develop over generations and time where whether it's a Christian pocket or a Muslim pocket or, you know, this version in this country that has this geography. So they all they all had their pros and cons, but they were all more cohesive. And that's where you sort of get nation states from, because then all those people identify together and create these entities. But then with world travel, technology, internet, it's cracking all those apart where there's too many questions. So basically, society can't function like that anymore because we're too hearing the party going on the other side of the world that's talking shit about us.
Too many monkeys.
Yeah. Too many damn monkeys. And then so the question is, as far as like what is the real answer spiritually, like I try to keep myself sane by thinking there has got to be a real answer.
Well, there's got to be a baseline somewhere, right? Yeah. That you can't cross.
Yeah. But I tend to go to more of like the sort of a karmic belief with multiple lives, and basically you are creating, if you're doing shitty things, you're sort of setting yourself up to be the recipient of those shitty things the next time around. Which that I actually want to find somebody to interview. The past life information data out there is fascinating because there is a lot of seriously interesting information with kids leaning towards not proving but giving evidence of
knowing
past
things
life.
That they can't possibly know.
And I've forgotten the guy that I contacted his office actually. It's which his name I've forgotten right now, but it's Jim something, I think, that is a professor at the University of Virginia, maybe, that's done the most extensive research on this. And I contacted him. They said he was too busy to do it, but I was trying to get him on the podcast.
I've come across a couple little nibbles on things like that where a kid knows, you know, full on French.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Or the famous one is a kid that knows American kid that started having night terrors of when he was like 6 years old, and his parents would ask him what the night terrors were about, and he would describe going down like in a fighter jet in flames, and like it's crazy. So his parents,
the details.
He knew the name of his co-pilot.
Oh, nice.
That died with him. I think he knew the name of the ship that the guy was on. He knew the type of airplane and could recognize it with never seen planes before. He knew the
how
model.
Do you glaze over that?
It's freaking fascinating. But then what's also fascinating is people are like, well, you know, why isn't that? But they're like, he grew out of it. Like, as you get more accustomed, if this is real, like, as you get more indoctrinated into this reality, the life you're living, then those things seem less real. So there's like and you start to forget about him, and now he has no memories of it, but they like documented him having all these memories and talking about it and burning alive in the plane, having
with the spiritual aspect, I guess up until 7 years old, you have a big connection to, you know, the spiritual realm and maybe your past lives, and maybe have a memory of, you know, in the versions of, you know, what they say, that you come here for a purpose and have, you know, soul group and have set out your life to experience certain things.
Yep.
And, you know, that those early ages, you have a greater connection than after 7 years old, that goes away and you're supposed to, you know, go through the game of life.
Yeah.
That'll be a good episode.
Yeah, I want to get into that.
Yeah.
Change things up from the politics.
Yeah.
We'll just end, try and lump it all together. So karmically, what is happening to the people that run the military industrial Mark Esper, Lloyd Austin, Anthony Blinken,
just making a ton of karma for their next life that they're going to have to.
Are they going to come back as like Somali children that just get bombed over and over again by American drones?
Yeah, they could be a crater, you know, in their next life. I don't know. Yeah. I wish they'd stop doing that.
Well, one point that we can't get into now because the battery is about to die. We're about to cut off point. But one thing I would like to end on is to emphasize, so this iron triangle between the military industrial complex, Congress, and the Defense Department.
Yeah.
Just like to reiterate, this is not unique to the military industrial complex.
Yeah.
It could easily be said the exact same thing exists for the pharmaceutical industrial complex with the FDA filling the role of the DOD.
Yeah.
Same thing could be said for the oil energy industry. Same thing could be even said for media. And
what do you think about banks and the SEC?
Yeah, banks and the SEC.
They jump from one side to the other side all the time.
And until people start to wake up, my hunch is, if you want to fix America's problems, this is the core. And I'm not even saying, because there's a lot of, like, I like to look at both sides of things and argue the pros and cons, and nothing is clearly all bad or all good lots of times when you start to look into it. But what I want people to do is to start actually having the conversation around this. You can have different arguments of what the solution is. And those can be wildly different from this is where
Let's
you do
just
get.
Just look at the chessboard and see the pieces.
Yeah.
And then we can all start talking about what we think they do.
Yeah. And this is where you do get I sort of diverge with hardcore libertarians on this. Like, their answer is free market everything. So, like, to them, this is one place where I diverge from them, as they say stuff like, tend to think like, you know, oh, well, as long as it's business, it's all good. So there's nothing wrong with the military industrial complex. And then on the other side, the far left, they come to the wrong conclusion or the wrong solution, I'd say, because they're the ones that now are getting that see this and then say, oh, well, the answer is for the government to take over everything. Socialism. Wow. Yeah. We need to get into Stalin and Mao and all of the ways that socialism, once again, centralization of power, whether it's a business people or it's the government, all of them kill people once they get centralized power. So it's not that any of these things are the right end solution, but it's more that people need to realize concentration of power is the danger, and diversifying that as much as possible, as frequently as possible, is the safest thing.
Yeah, and accountability.
If you need centralized power for a actual legitimate threat of some kind, whether that is it, then people need to be aware you're exchanging one thing for the other and you're potentially creating a worse danger. So it's got to have a sunset. It's got to have a timeline of how long you're allowing that power to consolidate.
Yeah, I'm excited for the time where there'll be accountability for lying.
I think that's
you're
just
in
gonna,
a big role.
That's going to be
you're
an
in
ad.
Charge of a bunch of things. And that's the thing. People sometimes are naive and they think that they're government might not never lies to you.
Yeah.
And you can find the instances of that all over the place.
You realize that Zuckerberg is going to have this audio and just use those catchwords as ads to lure you into the metaverse.
Yeah.
Come in here, Freddie, where liars are held accountable, and you'll go in and then you'll never get out.
Well, yeah, the algorithm is gonna single out the key, you know, points that are be put on fishing hooks for to drag me in.
Yep.
You know. Oh, this is where it's better. All right. Thank you.
All right. Well, you got anything to close out with? FCAT?
We've already talked your ear off. We'll do another one with one of these many topics that we dipped into.
Yep. We'll be back soon. And thank you, everybody. And come back soon.
Thanks for listening to the Independent Riot Podcast, your home for free thinkers, independent believers, and radicals questioning the status quo. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please do us a huge favor and leave a quick positive review on whatever platform you're using. It's free to you and super easy to leave us a good ranking and really help spread the word about the podcast to other independent thinking folks. Thanks for listening, and please go ahead and subscribe so we can be sure to see you next time.